Hi, you're listening to The Psychiatry Show here on Sirius XM 81. This is a doctor radio show, and this hour we're talking about having a relative with a severe and persistent mental illness. We are in particular having the pleasure of talking to Margaret Hawkins, who wrote After Schizophrenia, which just came out in soft cover, also called How We Got Barb Back. But you may have someone in your family or friendship circle with a number of different severe mental disorders, maybe substance abuse, maybe autism, depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. I mean, how do you take the steps to make sure your loved one gets the help that they need? How do you deal with your own feelings of denial and change and grief? Margaret Hawkins is here online to speak with us, and we invite you to join the conversation. You can call 1-877-NYU-DOCS or 877-698-3627. I wanted to ask you before we moved on, Margaret Hawkins, what were the issues that you never expected as you became, following your parents' death, the primary caregiver for your sister Barb, who had such severe untreated schizophrenia for those, I guess it was for decades?
It was decades. The issues I never anticipated. Well, I guess one of them was all the organizational skills it would take to sort of head up this loosely formed team of helpers. And I don't think I anticipated that I would have the, you know, good fortune to be in that position. I thought I'd have to do everything myself, and I didn't know how I was going to do that. And so I was focused on those issues, and frankly, that just seemed impossible, and I didn't know what I'd do. And instead, as I asked for help, people responded, and I found myself in a position of, you know, thinking about the caregiver and the social worker and the psychiatrist and the pharmacist who, you know, they deliver the medication to my sister free of charge to her house. You know, if they didn't, my sister doesn't leave the house, I would have to go out and get it. I don't, you know, we're not neighbors.
Right.
We don't live together. And so I would have to go to the pharmacy and then go to, you know, and this broad circle of people that there's a psychiatric nurse and, you know, all these people. And figuring out how to do that and how to work with the, the benefits that she has, it's been
daunting.
Crucial to have a social worker to help me with all of this.
Yes, I think what you describe is true even for people with serious mental illness who may not have a sister like you who steps in, but organizing the doctors, the paperwork, the insurance, the services, I feel that it so often exceeds the capability of someone with mental illness, even if they try very hard to get all of these things in order.
Oh, I can't imagine my sister being able to do this or anyone with mental illness. And frankly, I can't even imagine myself being able to do it by myself. I mean, I had the help of this person whose job it is to understand the system. And, I didn't even mention the people who, you know, deliver food. And, I mean, it really takes a community to take care of the weaker members. And that's what we're doing.
Well, you know, I think for people who are not aware of it, mental illness is the number one medical cost for all of our disability in the country. You may think of cancer or HIV, AIDS, but in fact, it's mental illness that is the biggest cost of care to our medical system and our disability to people in this country, now to all developed countries. And the leading disease that accounts for that disability is depression, but all of these are close behind it. Let's ask Tara what's on her mind about this. Tara from Texas, what do you think? What's your question?
First, I will comment that I cannot believe how similar my story is with the authors. My sister also, in the 70s, started slipping into mental illness. And I was 4 years older. I am 4 years older. And my parents were also very resistant. Mm-hmm. And as a 16-year-old, she was 12, I think, is my best guess when I first started noticing a lot. She was 12.
Tara, how is your sister now?
Well, she's 49. She's okay. I mean, it's manageable. My parents are still living. They're in their 80s, and they're remarkably healthy, and they take very good care of her. They were resistant, but not to the degree that the author's parents were. And in her 20s, sometime around maybe around 23 or 24, 25, they did get her in with a psychiatrist, and she's been on medication ever since.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It's day to day, week to week, month to month, because she changes. I mean, it's like the medications are working, then we notice they're not working anymore. And she's a very complicated case with schizophrenia and OCD, and she's very complicated.
Well, you know, Tara, I wonder if you might comment on the issue of housing. Where is your sister housed now, Tara?
Well, she lives with my parents, and they're in their 80s, and I know that it's going to be, you know, my responsibility, and I'm starting to get a little bit, almost kind of in a panic, because I just don't think I can have her live with me. I cannot do what my parents do. You know, she's disruptive, you know, she takes constant. They treat her like a child when you go over there. It's like she's a child, but I think they have to. Because she acts like a child.
Well, Tara, I think it would be time that you asked your parents to be involved in family meetings and the like, and you spoke with a social worker involved with your sister or a community mental health center just to get some more information.
Yeah,
because
your
sister will likely outlive your mom and dad.
Right. Well, my question is, is there any way? I Googled it. It seems like most everything I see in Houston or Austin, Texas is for the elderly, and it just seems like there's not that much. I would like to put her somewhere she's lively and young, and where there's maybe she could have interaction with people that aren't necessarily elderly.
Yeah, so it's a great question. I'm going to urge you to call your local community mental health to try to find out what might be available. There are some states and counties that have housing. And some of the housing is wonderful and connected to places with centers where people with mental illness can go. Other places are not that good. But you can find out. Every state is different. And counties are different within states.
Yeah.
So you'll be on a learning curve. And it's true that when you start looking into that, most people are looking to see where their parents might go when they can no longer care for themselves. It's more complex. But this is exactly the issue that you dealt with, Margaret. Margaret, how did you decide that your sister could stay at her parents' home by herself?
Well, it was something that I so wanted to be able to have happen, but I didn't really believe it was possible. And I just asked for help from the social work who I asked, you know, the hospice people who were taking care of my dad as he was dying gave me the name. I mean, I asked them for the name of someone who provided caregivers, and she found me the name of a social worker who came to the house. My sister would not leave the house, and she still won't. I mean, it's been over 30 years since she's left the property. So I was able to get someone to come in, and I said to her, is there any possible way my sister can stay here? And she said, I don't know. I don't know if it's safe. I don't know if it's legal, but I'm going to work on it and see if we can figure it out. So we took it from there. But Tara, I just want to say, I feel for you so much. Your situation is so similar to mine. The good thing is that your parents have already gotten her into the system, and that's going to be so helpful to you when you go to try to set up services for her. She's already, you know, documented as having this illness and having, you know, a prescription. That's a huge step forward. But I would recommend that you contact NAMI. That's an acronym, that NAMI, and it's the National Association or Alliance for the Mentally Ill.
Yeah.
And they can recommend housing in your area. And I know there are some wonderful group homes. If your sister is able to leave the house, she might be amenable to moving to a place. I mean, there's good ones and bad ones and medium ones. We never had that opportunity, and I was actually looking to put my sister in a nursing home, and I went to visit, and it was a beautiful place, but it was for, you know, people who were dying.
Right, right. My sister is, oh my gosh, she's 49, but you would think, people think she's like 30.
Yeah.
Right. Because she acts very young. I think she's confused about her age.
Yeah,
mine
is too. My sister, sometimes she says she's 100, and then she says she's 20. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she, unlike your sister, my sister is hyper. She's got her own car, her car keys. She wants to go everywhere, and she gets into trouble sometimes, and that worries me. I don't know if she should be going everywhere, and I just, you know, like she has to be, my parents, you know, treat her like, where are you going? When are you coming home?
Right.
You know, you can't do this, you can't do that, and I'm thinking, am I going to be doing that? I cannot do that.
Right.
I can't do it.
Think that now that you're starting sooner, you'll have a lot more information. And basically, your sister has two full-time supervisors, so you'll need probably some type of residence with a little supervision. I wish good luck to you, Tara, and to your family. You've all been dealing with this for a long time.
Yeah, good luck. You might want to check out my book because there's a description of many of these same issues you're dealing with in there.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to order both books today, like right now. I can't believe the similarity. I'm in shock.
I hope it helps. You have many, many good things to happen to you. I don't think you should worry.
Well,
very good. Thank you for your call, Tara. Let's speak with Catherine from Massachusetts, who's got a comment about this. Catherine?
Yes, I was just wondering for some possible advice on how, because I'm a sister-in-law of someone who both my husband and I believe he has Asperger's, and he's about 30, 6 years younger than my husband. But his parents will not deal with it. They just completely ignore it. They think that he's perfectly fine, although he doesn't relate in society and he doesn't go out of the house. And we've been able to get him to a different doctor who is, you know, trying to approach some of these subjects. But literally, we don't even know how to kind of approach it with him because he has no idea what's really going on with him. He just chooses to not relate socially with the world.
How old is he, Catherine?
30.
Did he go to college or high school?
You know, he did. He had a really hard time with high school. They took him out at 16 where he went straight to college. He managed to function at college and actually graduated like summa cum laude. But the day after he graduated, he went into this major funk and just literally has been in the house ever since.
Right. So he had some sort of a breakdown after college and he was marginal beforehand. You know, I'm not sure what we would call the disease. You don't know either. It's possible in the future we won't even have a disease called Asperger's. We would only have a disease called autism. But I think what's interesting that you describe, Catherine, is that your brother-in-law was able to have some sphere of functioning academically. Mm-hmm. It sounds like he's never had close friends. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, and even dealing with my husband after he hasn't made, I mean, we live 20 minutes away, but even dealing with him after he hasn't seen him for a week, very difficult. Like his voice will change and conversation is very difficult to pull.
So again, we now scientifically, you know, people look for the genes for autism and the genes for schizophrenia or bipolar or depression. And a lot of them are just all the same genes and the same vulnerabilities. I don't know that this issue is dramatically different than the issue that Margaret Hawkins dealt with in her book, How We Got Barb Back After Schizophrenia. So it would be one interesting perspective for you, because what you have in similar is that the parents allow him to do whatever he wants to avoid his fears. And you and your husband think this makes your brother-in-law worse. But right now, his parents are alive and they're enabling him to do this. So that's the set of questions you have. And I doubt that you and your husband could do much to change their mind. But it would be nice if there was a day program that your brother-in-law could attend so he could get in the world a little bit. Margaret, you have thoughts about this issue Catherine deals with her brother-in-law's Asperger-type behavior?
Well, yes. I mean, it sounds, you know, in some ways it sounds like my sister, although before she got ill, she was socially very accomplished and, you know, really kind of charismatic. But then she became this way. And, you know, one of the features of many mental illnesses is this complete self-absorption. And it makes it so hard for people to accept help or be around other people or to empathize at all. And so I understand how difficult that is. But I think of Dolores' idea of a day program is wonderful. If he's able to to, you know, leave the house and go someplace. And again, you know, I would recommend, you know, contacting NAMI and seeing if they can recommend places in your area, because they, you know, they, when I go to, my sister won't go, but her social worker who does outreach and comes to the house, sometimes I go see her at her day program. I go instead of my sister. And it's wonderful. The people there, they, you know, they have different conditions and different diseases, and you know, but they're together and they do things, and they have a drumming group, and they have a, they have music, and they have food, and sometimes they go on field trips, and it's, I don't know. Oh, and they have a choir. I mean, it's heartbreakingly beautiful to see them standing together singing. You know, it's a, it's such a good thing. And many of them are socially extremely, you know, backward, but it, it helps them to be together.
Yes, and also if you believe in lifelong resilience, then you want to be exposed to the kinds of environment that can stimulate your brain. I find that whatever the diagnosis is, it's fear of leaving the house sometimes because of anxieties across disorders that sets the stage for this regression and family interference. Everybody wants to protect the person, and they end up communicating, gee, you can't handle it.
Right.
So you do them more of a favor if you get them to feel their feelings, but do the thing.
Yeah. Right, which is why one of my questions is, I mean, literally no one has broached the subject with him. So, like, if I were to introduce some type of day program with him, his first thing he would think is, I'm mentally ill. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you could find him a volunteer job at a hospital a few hours a week. I mean, the idea is to have a structured reason to get out of the house. And you can't do too much. You know, it's not up to you right now. I mean, he's got parents who are in his close system enabling a sort of behavior. So you and your husband need a little bit of wisdom. There's stuff you can do and stuff you can't do. And you might for a while have to just accept things. I mean, Margaret, you went through that stage, right?
Yeah. Oh, for decades of having to hold back and not being able to really influence it. And, you know, I wish they'd been willing. But, you know, maybe, I don't know whether your parents are willing to discuss it at all, but it was the same thing with my sister. No one would speak the word to her. And she didn't, you know, she was very fearful. She hid her most, you know, dangerous symptoms or her worst symptoms from us because she was afraid, you know, she would be sent away or something. So it was this whole family conspiracy to keep it secret.
Yeah. It's more of why secrets don't help. And as painful it is, as it is that your child, your parent, your sibling, your cousin, your best friend got brain problems that interfered with function and couldn't move on with life, what you want to be able to do is meet them where they are and see if you can help think through what would improve it. And if you can think that way, that the life they're living right now is not necessarily a happy one, you can have an impact. Thank you, Catherine, for your call. I particularly want to thank Margaret Hawkins for coming back on the show. I think her story, how we got Barb back after schizophrenia, really provides so much information about how a sibling thinks through the area of mental dysfunction, how they deal with the denial and the issues that may come up in the family. Remember, almost every family has someone with serious mental illness. You're not alone. Again, this is The Psychiatry Show. I will be right back, and we will be talking in the next hour about turning 40. It's called Fortitude with Sarah Brokaw, author of a new book. Stay tuned. Thank you.